It's Fantasy Bomb time. I'm Pierre Camus. With me is Chris Mangano. Chris, what if I told you that the Patriots' best receiver so far in training camp is somebody that most of you have never even heard
Come on, Pierre. Everybody's heard of Josh Gordon.
of? Ah, sneaky. Yes, Josh Gordon. We wish that Flash was still on the field, don't we? How many people are drafting Josh Gordon still these days?
I'm pretty sure he's getting drafted in like every deep best ball draft there is, just in case.
I'm thinking, we haven't done too many. I did a couple of best ball drafts, and I've done a dynasty draft, and I can tell you that he's been drafted in every one of those I've done so far. So yeah, you're probably right. But this is a guy who's not even being drafted anywhere at all. Some people don't even know he's in the league still. And we're going to talk about some deep sleepers. And when I say deep, I mean deeper than Atlantis. I'm talking about guys that have no ADP. That's what we're talking about today. So look for that and some others. We're going to cover every position and talk about some sleepers that you need to watch heading into draft season because it's almost here. You ready for draft season, by the way?
I'm ready.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into it, guys. Let's drop the bomb.
It's a fantasy bomb.
Here we are back at the Fantasy Bomb presented by Rotoballer. And I already told you who we are. You know where we are. We're here every single week covering fantasy football. And it's going to be draft coverage from here on out because I think draft season has officially gotten underway. We're almost into August. Training camps have already started. And so you need to know who to draft, who to watch, who to avoid. We're going to have all that for you in the coming weeks. But today we're going to start with some deep sleepers. And I'm talking about guys who aren't on anybody's radar, probably. Unless you watch and follow us all the time, because we probably mentioned some of these names, but we're going to go as deep as possible because we don't want to give you the same information over and over, right? All right, let's get into it. Let's start with that team, the Patriots, because we know, as we said, the receiving core is highly questionable at best because we know Edelman now has a thumb thing. He's out for what, a couple of weeks? Gronk is gone, and they're, I guess, best receiver at this time is a rookie, and we don't know what he's going to bring to the table. Sadly, Josh Gordon is not there at the moment. I don't know. You care to speculate on what's going to happen with him? When is it that we're going to get excited again about picking him up midseason?
No, I don't want to speculate about that at all.
Not at all. All right. Gave you your chance to make a bold prediction there. Like he's going to lead the league in receiving or something.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Oh, we'll stay away from that. But let's talk about who is there in camp. And so we know some of the names, right? Like I said, Edelman has been missing time, and Harry is, coming along, but we don't really know what to expect. And we know Phil Dorsett's still there. It's my man from the U. But here's a guy who wasn't on the team last year, and he's emerged. And I quote unquote, and I don't take quotes lightly here, the best receiver in Patriots camp by far. Take a stab. Who you think it could be talking about?
Well, we already eliminated Josh Gordon, so I don't know. Give it to me.
Good. All right. So I know you wanted to say Braxton Berrios, my other guy from the U,
Yeah.
right? Berrios, he is on my radar. Like I don't want to list him just yet. I don't want anybody else to draft him but me. So I'm keeping my eye on Braxton Berrios. But no, this is a guy who wasn't on the team last year, as I mentioned, Maurice Harris.
Ooh.
So one of your guys, a boy from the Skins. So as a Skins fan, you're kind of familiar with him. So tell me what you remember about Maurice Harris. How do you feel he might fit in that offense? So far in training camp, he has almost as many catches. Granted, it's been like 4 days, but he's got as many catches as all the other receivers combined, and he's been the favorite target of Tom Brady so far.
Yeah, I don't remember much of Maurice Harris in Washington. but he didn't really do much. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, are we really putting, I guess if it turns out Edelman is gonna, if his thumb is worse than they're letting us on and he's gonna end up missing some games, then yeah, Maurice Harris definitely becomes a guy who, you could draft late in your draft, stash him on a bench and hope he really does emerge. But I don't know. To me, this is still Edelman number one, as far as where I see the targets going. Edelman number one, James White number two, N'Keal Harry number three, and then Dorsett, Harris, Berrios, whoever, picking up the scraps after that. So, I mean, it's deep. So, again, like you said, he doesn't even have an ADP. So, it's, you know, you can't really – you're not asking for a whole lot here if you draft him. But I'm just not ready to put a lot of stock into he's the best receiver in camp after 4 days.
Yeah. No, we don't want to overreact, obviously. But we're talking, okay, you're going to use a last-round pick as a flyer, right? Or – I should say second to last pick. Your last pick should be a kicker, right? You shouldn't pick a kicker ever before the last round. But like a best ball, right, deep, best ball league, or just your last pick in a draft, you know, you're looking for a lottery ticket. Like a lot of people are going to be on Dorsett, right, because they know him. They've seen him perform even in the playoffs. And some people will be up on Berrios. But who would you rather have between Dorsett, who we've seen, Harris, a guy who might have more opportunity in New England, or do you think that number 4/5 target in New England just isn't going to bring enough to the table?
I'd still prefer Dorsett, and maybe I'm just hard-headed. But again, like you said, we've seen him out there. We've seen him produce decently. And if something were to happen to Edelman, which is very, you know, not out of the question, he's been banged up before. He's getting up there in age. He's got a thumb issue. Then now that, you know, number four, number five guy becomes the number three guy, and whoever that is between Dorsett, Harris, Berrios, whoever it is, will have some value. But I still think Dorsett will be ahead of Harris come regular season.
Yeah, I've got to think so too. I mean, he's got that rapport already. You know, Harris has just got to look out for, though. He's got some good size. I didn't even realize just watching him. He's 6'3". He can play in the slot or outside, and he's kind of been sharing time there in camp. So he's not strictly a guy who has to play in the slot. And so it depends on how he performs. It's not just like a temporary Edelman replacement, in other words. So if he does happen to outperform Dorsett, or if he, you know, shows that he can do other things, you know, it's a guy to watch for. And I remember last year, I actually picked up Maurice Harris in one of my leagues. Last year, he had that monster game. You remember in week 6, he had 10 catches for 124 yards. After that, he kind of tapered off. But he was a decent Jameson Crowder replacement for a couple of weeks, and then he just kind of fell off. But I think that more had to do with, like, Washington's offense than in Harris himself. But all right, let's move on to a slightly different guy. This is someone you probably have heard of, and someone who kind of was falling because we thought all these guys were jumping ahead of him in the pack, but Rashard Higgins in Cleveland. Now, they got Antonio Callaway last year, and of course, you might have heard they got a guy named Beckham this year. So it looks like Higgins was going to be the number four guy at best, which even despite whatever we say about Cleveland, you know, this year, like being a totally different team, still, you don't want to be the number four target anywhere. That's not going to bring you fantasy value. But word is that Higgins is outplaying Callaway and could be the third receiver. We know Beckham has had some injuries here and there. So, I mean, is there a scenario where before long we see Higgins as the number two target in Cleveland? And is that interesting enough to you to be worth a late round pick?
There's no scenario where I see him as the number two target unless two of Njoku, Landry, or Odell Beckham get hurt. Because I still think, again, kind of like we talked about the Patriots, even though it wasn't a tight end, I think we're looking at Odell, Njoku, Landry in some order. I like Landry a little better than Njoku as far as who I think is going to get more targets. And then you're going to have Higgins and Callaway. Now, I really like Higgins, the player, but I mean, at this point, we're talking about a guy who's been in the league for 3 years. You know, he went 6 catches rookie year, 27 catches his second year, and then he dropped down to 39 catches last year. Although he did have, you know, a huge 14 yards per catch, 572-yard season, and 4 touchdowns. But it's just hard when a guy's going into his fourth year and hasn't really produced to expect him to all of a sudden produce. I do like him more than Callaway, though. I know a lot of people like Callaway, but I do like Higgins a little more personally. So I could see him being ahead of Callaway, you know, after Njoku. He could be number four, which again, I think gives him some value if something were to happen to one of the guys ahead of him. But it's just hard to trust a guy entering his fourth season who really hasn't done much yet.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because here's the thing. We're talking deep sleepers, so a lot of people are new about Callaway. I mean, they were on him last year, and they think, you know, he's got a lot of potential. He's very athletic. He's a good player. He just maybe doesn't quite have the smarts, the football smarts. You know, he makes a lot of boneheaded plays and mental mistakes. Off the field issues notwithstanding, because he was pretty good behavior wise last year. But a lot of people are on Callaway. They see him as a sleeper. They see, you know, he's got potential, big play potential, which is true. People are forgetting about Higgins. So you just said straight up you'd prefer Higgins to Callaway, not just because he comes free, but you think Higgins can at least bring more consistency. And it looks like he is in training camp, which is, you know, why now he's getting a little bit of buzz.
Yeah, Callaway's going to have those big catches, those big plays. But on this offense, when you already have Odell, Landry, and Njoku, like I said, and even Nick Chubb, even Duke Johnson, Kareem Hunt coming back halfway through the season, it's going to be hard for anybody else to really get consistent targets unless something happens to the guys above them. But, yeah, Callaway's going to have those big splash plays from time to time, but I think that's about all he's really going to do. Whereas if something were to happen to Odell or Landry, I think Higgins could slide into that number two wide receiver role over Callaway.
There you go. So, again, got to keep an eye on. We'll see what happens in camp as things progress. A lot of mouths to feed, but that's good for the Cleveland offense in general. I think this is good news for Baker Mayfield, who, you know, we're both all over this year. Let's move on to San Francisco. We're sticking with receivers here. I like to keep things nice and tidy. So let's stay with the same position. San Francisco, it would seem that they have a lot of mouths to feed also. Not quite the same caliber, right? We're not talking about Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, but we have a lot of guys. And if I list you guys like Marquise Goodwin, we know about, of course, the rookies, Deebo Samuel, Jalen Hurd. They have a guy named Jordan Matthews, you might have heard of. Trent Taylor, maybe Kendrick Bourne, Richie James. That's a lot of guys. They're not all going to make the cut, right? Some of those players aren't going to stick, and I think it's those last two who aren't. The guy who's getting a lot of buzz right now, again, as possibly being the starting slot receiver, is Taylor. Guy that some people at first were saying, oh, he might not make the roster this year. And now they're saying he's starting. So, I mean, do you feel like this is just camp bunk? Like this is just hype that, you know, because he's running with the ones right now, that's something that people are overreacting to? Or do you think that this is a guy who could have totally hidden value as a starting slot receiver for Jimmy G? Because the other receivers, you know, other than Goodwin, are pretty much unproven.
Yeah, this I've never been a big Trent Taylor fan. He's the type of receiver, I mean, 10 yards per reception, 8 yards per reception, his two seasons in the league so far, 3 touchdowns in 29 games. I mean, what? This is the kind of guy that gets you like 8 to 10 points. And I can find 8 to 10 points on the waiver wire just about every single week, pretty much, in a PPR format. I'm talking about PPR format. And you can find 8 to 10 points just about everywhere. So I'd rather, you know, take a chance on one of the rookies or, you know, guys with a little more upside. Because this is, like you said, there's a lot of – we didn't even talk about Dante Pettis. There's a lot of – who everybody seems to think is going to be the wide receiver to own in San Francisco. Like, even if Trent Taylor is the starter, you got George Kittle. You got the 10 running backs who can all catch passes, right? Coleman, McKinnon, Breida can all catch passes. You got Goodwin, you mentioned, we got Pettis, we got Deebo Samuel, the rookie. I mean, even if Trent Taylor is the starting slot receiver, what kind of snap, you know, count is he going to get? And when you're only getting, you know, one catch for 8 yards on average, or you're only getting 8 yards when you catch the ball, I mean, you better catch a lot of passes, right? Especially if you're not finding the end zone. So to me, he's just kind of meh, like,
yeah.
I'd rather see him as one of those guys where it's, you know, week 9 and you're just, there's a bunch of guys on bye and you're just so desperate. So you just pick up Trent Taylor off waivers and take your 8 points and move on.
Yeah, I agree. I got actually 3 points here. So first of all, you mentioned Pettis. Okay, so everybody, let me just declare this right now. Dante Pettis is not a sleeper. Okay, when everybody's mentioning him, hyping him, saying he's going to be the breakout, whatever, he's not a sleeper. All right, everybody knows about Dante Pettis, and everybody's calling him a sleeper. When everybody calls you a sleeper, you're not a sleeper anymore. All right, he's not. Now he might have a great season. I like Dante Pettis. I agree. I got no problem with him. Even his current ADP, which is rising, but he's not a sleeper. Just don't call him that. Number two, when you have a tight end who's going to set records and catch 100 balls or more, that takes away from who? The slot receiver, right? Because when he's looking down the middle of the field and he needs outlet or he wants that short 5 yards, between Kittle and Taylor, who's he, you know, probably who's he going to go with? I'm guessing Kittle. Yeah. So that hurts because, again, this is not a team that needs to go with three receiver sets constantly because they have one of the best tight ends in the game. And then the last thing is with Taylor, like I said, he doesn't jump off the page in any way. He's like vanilla yogurt, you know? I mean, he's not bad. It's nothing you can complain about, but you're going to forget about it pretty soon after you eat it, right? You're not going to remember, what did I have for lunch? He's not going to win you league. He's not going to win you anything, right? If you want that few points, you can get it somewhere else. All right, let's move on. And before we finish with the receiver, let me ask you a question here. We know AJ Green is out. At first they said 6 to 8 weeks, and now we're seeing it might be more. I heard, last thing I heard was it might be a few games. That's not good. All right, so we're looking possibly Green, and again, how long it takes him to work his way back. It might be half the season here. So who do you think could come out of Cincinnati with some value? Because obviously we know Tyler Boyd. After that, it's a bunch of names that, like, if you really follow the draft, the NFL draft closely, or college, like, you might have heard of these guys, but they haven't done much in the NFL. So, I mean, we got Josh Malone, got Auden Tate, Cody Core, Alex Erickson. I don't even know if John Ross is worth mentioning. He's not really a sleeper. He's been asleep the last couple of years. But
doesn't John Ross have a hamstring injury too?
He probably. That would make
sense.
Is
that what you want for a speed guy? You don't want a speed guy with a hamstring injury?
Yeah, he was very speedy. Last year, he averaged, 5 yards a catch or something? It's weird. So, I mean, is there any hope here for a guy to emerge or just stay away?
Not a receiver. There's a guy I like, but not a receiver.
Well, who do you like?
My boy, Tyler Eifert. I think this is a great spot for Tyler Eifert, who isn't even really being drafted. I mean, he's being drafted in, like, deep, deep leagues, but in most leagues, he's not even being drafted. Again, we saw last year, he was off to a good start last year. I know people say he's injury prone, but he had the back issue, but the injury he had last year was a freak injury. It was similar to the one Odell had, a couple years ago, where the guy rolled up on his ankle and broke his foot or whatever, or broke his leg or whatever it was. It wasn't the type of injury, like a recurring type of injury. It was a freak kind of thing. So you look at this, obviously Tyler Boyd, but then, you know, Joe Mixon, and then who do you got after that? Nobody. And we know Andy Dalton and Tyler Eifert have a connection. They've had big games. They had a big season together. So I really like Tyler Eifert. I think he's a guy that is probably not going to get drafted in most leagues, and he's going to be a hot waiver wire pickup at the tight end position at some point.
Yeah, I know you've always been an Eifert guy. He's one of your boys. So, just we'll cross our fingers, hope he stays healthy. And this is a guy, you're right, he's not really being drafted in most redraft leagues right now. So that's because of the injury. People are scared, you know, think he's not going to come back. But I don't know. It's free, right? He's a free pick as a second tight end. You could do a lot worse. So I'm just saying that's a guy I think worth a shot, because what the worst thing is, your backup tight end, you drop him and you pick up somebody else who you're just praying for a touchdown each week. So, exactly. A receiver. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are talented, had good college numbers. You know, Tate's a big body. He could get some red zone looks, especially if John Ross is injured. I've always been big on Josh Malone. I thought he might do something, but he hasn't. So it's kind of like what you were saying with Higgins. All of a sudden, after a couple of years, the light's going to flip on and he's going to be a stud. I doubt it. So this is disappointing to me, because I think this just hurts the Cincinnati offense as a whole. And that's a team I thought was really being slept on, especially on offense. I thought that they were going to have a really solid season. So
yeah, me too.
Just changed.
Haven't they lost two offensive linemen as well? Didn't I see that?
Yeah, that's another thing, is the offensive line has always been bad, and it doesn't look like it's necessarily going to get better. So, yeah, I might have to start selling my Andy Dalton shares somewhere. Let's move on to running back. Everybody loves running backs. So let's go deeper than the page of a book. Let me look. Let's talk about injuries here again. Tennessee. So Derrick Henry's got a walking boot. They say it's not serious. He's got a calf injury. Now we know about Deion Lewis, right? He's obviously the number one back if Henry is hurt. But there's been a lot of hype around Alex Barnes. Alex Barnes, a guy, put up good rushing numbers at Kansas State for a bad Kansas State team, really. He had, what, 1,300 yards last year, 12 touchdowns. And people are saying he looks really good. Now, again, this is training camp. So do you think there's room for a guy like him to step in, especially if Henry is hurt? Or what do you think about this situation?
No, I definitely do, because I don't think, even if Henry is hurt and has to miss time, I don't think the Titans are just going to lean on Deion Lewis for the bulk of the work. I think they don't, like, I don't think they view Deion Lewis that way. So yeah, there's going to be room for somebody. And if they don't go out and bring in a running back off the street, then Barnes has a great chance. And like you said, he's pretty much free. This is definitely a sleeper I would be targeting, especially with the Henry news. Because if we get closer to the season, if we start, getting into preseason games and Henry's not suiting up, he's going to start having an ADP. People are going to start drafting him late just in case, right? So definitely, if you're doing drafts now, especially if you're in like a deep draft, just grab him with your last pick and just hold on to him and see what happens with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, now again, it's still early. It's a month before the season really starts. So, if they're saying that Henry's injury is not serious, then it maybe is nothing. But like you said, sometimes these injuries can linger. You could have an injury somewhere else. I mean, you don't know. But the fact that Barnes has looked explosive, and like you said, Deion Lewis is a guy who they've never been viewed as a bell cow. I know Henry has been in the mix too, but even games where Henry wasn't effective or wasn't playing. Lewis last year only touched the ball 20 times once. He had several games where he had single digit carries. It's a guy that they're, he's going to be splitting time with somebody. So,
I agree.
all right, moving on. Talk about another rookie here. So, I know we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we talked about holdouts, training camp news headlines, right? We talked about Zeke. So, we both agree that Zeke's going to get paid, right? He's going to show up, but he hasn't yet. So let me ask you the big if. If Zeke is still holding out or something happens, these guys, they hold out, they miss time, and then they get injured because they are not in shape. Something happens, right? Could happen. Zeke's been injury free so far in his career, but there's always a first time, right? All the Zeke owners and fans right now, Cowboy fans are hating me because I'm jinxing him or whatever. I don't believe in that. But what happens if Zeke goes down, he doesn't show up, something like that? Who's the guy to own in Dallas?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, a lot of people really like Tony Pollard right now, but they did just go out and sign Alfred Morris. They brought Alfmo back. Yeah, I mean, Pollard looks like definitely the guy to have right now. I'm starting to see him get drafted in a lot of leagues, though. He's starting to really garner some buzz, as it looks like, the Zeke holdout might actually become, be a serious thing, right? Like, it doesn't seem like we're getting to a resolution anytime soon. I'm starting to get to the same nervous level about Zeke as I am about Melvin Gordon. So,
Yeah.
he's becoming a pretty popular pick right now, and it seems like, I mean, who else do they even have besides him and Alfred Morris? Who's the other running back they have?
I think if they still have, I know I mentioned a few weeks ago, I liked Mike Weber, super fast, and is a guy I thought would get a chance, but then he was slowed by an injury. I think he had a hamstring injury too. He seems to be kind of falling behind a little bit. That's it. I mean, they don't have any other veteran backs. They got rid of Rod Smith. They don't have anybody else. They've always been like that. Like, we don't really care. Like, we have Zeke and that's it. We don't need anybody else. So yeah, Pollard seems to be the guy, and you're right. I know I just saw he was drafted in one of our leagues late, but he's a guy who's starting to get some buzz. So Maybe we're gonna have to take that deep tag off him pretty soon. He's just gonna be a sleeper, not a deep sleeper. But yeah, if you're worried, now you're making me nervous. If you're nervous about Zeke, I'm nervous because you usually are like, ah, it'll be fine. Don't worry. I'm not worried. So if you're worried, I think I should be worried.
Well, I think after what happened with Le'Veon Bell last year, you have to be worried. And there's no way if I had a top three pick, if I was doing a draft today, I had a top three pick, there's no way I'm picking Zeke. There's no way. Like, it's just not worth. Like, give me Saquon, you know, McCaffrey or Kamara, where I know they're not going to hold out. Those guys are going to be there week one. I mean, barring like an injury or something, there's no reason to even deal with the Zeke headache, and or the chances that, you know, he misses some significant time trying to get a bigger contract.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because you're saying a guy like, you know, Kamara, McCaffrey, they'll basically give you about the same amount of points anyways as Zeke would, so without the worry.
Exactly.
How far do you go, just out of, since we're bringing it up, how far down would you go with Zeke right now? Like, would you take a guy like, I don't know, James Conner instead of Zeke at this point?
Yes, I would.
Wow, okay. Now I'm really
you
nervous.
You know I really like James Conner, so...
Okay, that's true. Okay, well, you know what? How about Mixon? Because we talked about the Bengals being, you know, in trouble.
No, I don't even like Mixon.
Yeah, that's true. You never liked Mixon.
But if you look at James Conner and Zeke last year, if I had James Conner and you had Zeke, it wasn't like – I don't even know who had the edge, honestly. I mean, obviously, when James Conner got hurt, Zeke had the edge. But if you look at the games when they both were healthy, then that's what my point I'm trying to make. Like, the difference between – a healthy James Conner and a healthy Zeke is not significant. It's not like Zeke is outscoring him by 10 points every week, right?
Right.
We're talking very close, and there's probably weeks where Conner outscored Zeke. You know what I mean? So why take the risk of Zeke holding out long-term when you can just get a guy who gets you similar, sometimes better production, and you don't have to worry about the risk?
Yeah, the first round, it's basically about trying to mitigate risk because, people have been burned. Le'Veon Bell last year, David Johnson the year before, whether it's injury, holdout, whatever. Yeah, your first round pick is gone for the season. That almost sinks your team single-handedly, right? Which is why Todd Gurley's not a first round pick anymore. So, not going to mention Daryl Henderson. He's far from a sleeper at this point. Not going to mention in that situation. Let's go one more running back, though. So here's a guy who I'd see getting drafted here and there, but again, this is very end of best ball drafts, like, you know, very late. This is a guy who's actually more popular among experts. You know, we do a lot of expert leagues and mocks. So I'm seeing the experts are on top of him. The typical fantasy football fan probably has never heard of him. So there's a reason for that. So this guy played at North Dakota State, and he wasn't even drafted. But it's possible that he becomes a starting running back in Tampa Bay, which we both agree could be a pretty valuable proposition here. So Bruce Anderson. Why should we pay attention? He's not really fast, right? He ran a 4.6 3.40. Like I said, he didn't play D1. He was not drafted. But the fact that he's in Bruce Arians' offense, is that enough to give him attention?
I think the fact he's in Bruce Arians' offense and he's in this offense where his competition is Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber. Now, Peyton Barber was okay last year. I think Peyton Barber was actually better than people think. I mean, he wasn't great, but I think he was better than people think he was. People act like he was horrible. Ronald Jones, on the other hand, I don't even think – I mean, he's a guy I could see not even being in the league in a year or two, like just being completely out of the league. I don't think he's even in the picture here, really. So, to me – so that just means it's really between Anderson and Peyton Barber. And, you know, even if Anderson and Barber are splitting time – you're getting Anderson for free, right? You're getting it for free. And if he ends up outplaying Peyton Barber and winning that job, yeah, he's in a great spot. Now, he might not be a great player, but sometimes that doesn't matter. Opportunity can trump talent in fantasy football. So, yeah, definitely this is a guy, I think, to keep your eye on for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point right there. So Barber, kind of the incumbent starter. We assume he'll still be the starter right now. As a guy, he only averaged 3.7 yards per carry. And I'm looking it up here. His rushing average has dropped each year he's been in the league. It started at 4.1 and he's a rookie, then 3.9, 3.7. That's not going to cut it. So he's not bad. Like you say, he's serviceable, but he's not the answer, right? Like, if they can find a guy who does more, has explosiveness, he's going to get a chance, right? And new coach coming in, he's going to give him a chance. And this is a guy, even though he wasn't drafted, he was kind of handpicked by Arians when they signed their free agents. He probably saw something that he liked. You know, he can catch the ball. You know, like I said, not super big, not super fast, but versatile. And, you know, if he gets the job done, he gets it done, right? I would say the same thing about Peyton Barber. He's not super fast either. So, and yeah, so Ronald Jones would count as a sleeper. That would be an overhyped sleeper. I'm not touching him. But Bruce Anderson's a deep sleeper. I would much rather take a last round pick on Bruce Anderson than waste like an eighth or ninth round pick on Ronald Jones, which a lot of people are doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our favorite position of all, and that's tight end. We have to mention a couple of these guys. A guy I see getting a lot of hype among the experts is Darren Waller. So I'm still trying to figure out why, other than the fact that, yes, the Raiders threw a ton to the tight end last year. Jared Cook had a nice season. But is that just because they had nobody else to throw to? Or do you think there's something here with Waller people are seeing that he's going to break out? Because the reports I'm seeing, again, these are beat writers, and sometimes they get a little overzealous, right? Especially they're covering their local team. They're saying that he plays like a wide receiver. Okay, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. What do you think? What's your gut telling you about Waller?
No, I'm with you. People are throwing out, like, they're saying, oh, this is what Jared Cook did last year. The Raiders let him walk, and now it's just all Weller. But their wide receivers last year were Amari Cooper for half the season doing nothing. Jordy Nelson basically retired but still playing football. And Seth Roberts, right? Those were like their wide receivers last year. Now they brought in a guy who's pretty good, Antonio Brown. I think he's pretty good. He's had some okay years. And on the other side, they have Tyrell Williams, who is a nice player. He's an okay player, but he's definitely, you know, there's definitely an upgrade at the wide receiver position for the Raiders. I think Weller's okay because he's going to get some looks, but he's not going to – if people are expecting Weller to be Jared Cook again, they're dreaming. There's no way. He's just not going to get the volume Jared Cook was going. Like, literally, Jared Cook was Derek Carr's only – like, his favorite target every single week. But if Antonio Brown is not Derek Carr's favorite target every single week, then the Raiders have a serious problem. A serious problem. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, he's going pretty late. He's starting to creep up. That's the problem. He's probably going to get to the point where his ADP is not going to make sense anymore. Like, right now, it still kind of makes sense because I think you can get him as a – like, around the tight end, I don't know, 18 to 20 range, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But we can see that creep up to, like, top – borderline top 12 by draft season as his hype picks up, and then he's not even going to be worth it at all, in my opinion.
Right, good point. And this, again, a guy who's been in the league 3 years. He was with Oakland last year, by the way. Played 4 games, caught 6 balls for 75 yards. So if he was so great and athletic, why didn't they use him last year? They were set throwing in the end zone to Lee Smith, right? And, you know, other tight ends besides him. So, okay, now here's the thing. It sounds like we're telling you not to draft him, right? So why do we bring him up on deep sleepers? This is a guy to still keep an eye on because, you know, if he does emerge and he's the starter – and, you know, yes, Antonio Brown's going to be their main target, but he does have a chance to make an impact. So if you're looking for a tight end, right, as your backup, then this is a guy keep an eye on, see what happens in camp, see if he emerges, because he's getting buzz, and, you know, we don't want to think that we know it all. Right now, I think he's worth a chance if you're looking for a tight end late. But, I mean, you just said it, Chris. If his ADP keeps rising and rising, don't make him a top 15 tight end pick. You know, don't count on him as your starter, for God's sake, please. I mean, don't take him over somebody like Austin Hooper, you know, or Jared Cook. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and then another guy, let's finish here. One last tight end. Oh, this is deep. We're talking about the tight end for the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. So Charles Clay is gone, thankfully for them. And so they did sign Tyler Kroft. You know, talk about Eifert earlier in the Bengals. Kroft had some nice games filling in. He went to Buffalo, was supposed to be their starter. Well, he broke his foot. He's out for 3 to 4 months. Jason Kroom is a guy that they've had around. He's, you know, nice guy, tight end, you know, athlete. But he's also had a hamstring injury. He's fallen behind. And so here's a guy they took in the third round. If you follow the draft, you already know Dawson Knox out of Ole Miss. So do you think the Bills tight end, especially a rookie tight end, could have some value here? Because he's so far looked like the best tight end in camp, regardless of injury.
Well, I don't. And there's two things here. Number one, I typically shy away from rookie tight ends. It's not very often. I mean, it does happen, obviously. We saw it with, you know, Kittle had an okay year. I think Gronk had a really good rookie year. But it's very rare that a rookie tight end comes out and really lights it up. And the other thing is, when you look at the Bills last year with Josh Allen, he doesn't throw to the tight end. I mean, Charles Clay was a guy last year I was drafting very late in a lot of best ball leagues because you could get him, I think, almost, you know, towards the end of the draft as your third tight end. And then Josh Allen just doesn't throw to him, right? He's not that type of player. He's a gunslinger. You know, he likes to be looking down the field. He's not a dump off kind of guy. He's not a check down kind of guy. And if nothing's there, he'll just take off and run. So it's just hard for me to buy into any Bills tight end, no matter who it is. Even if it was a healthy Tyler Croft, it'd be really hard for me to buy into any Bills tight end.
I agree with that. I mean, it's true. We know Allen likes to throw deep. You know, he's definitely not a check down. He's the anti-Eli. But I'll tell you why this is interesting. I bring him up because if it was Croft who was a starter, like, I'd have zero interest for all the reasons you just said. But Knox, now that he's kind of forced into action, again, being a rookie, but he seems to be a quick study. He's turning heads already. He's very athletic. All his workout measurements, he ranked 70th percentile or higher. He ran, I think, a 4.63 or something. I mean, he's very fast for a tight end. So he's a guy who could be kind of that downfield threat. He could stretch the field as a tight end. And so that, I think, could play better to Allen's strengths. He's a guy who, just trying to think of like a quick comparison. You know, he's a guy who, I'm not saying he's Mike Gesicki, like, he's not insane workout numbers, but a guy who's more of an athlete at tight end. And so I think that could work because, you know, also thinking of a guy like, let's say, Mark Andrews in Baltimore. You know, he can make that big play down the field given the opportunity. So I'm not saying he needs to be owned everywhere. I'm not saying I'm going to start him ever, but he's definitely under the radar. He's definitely a deep sleeper. And so, again, taking a chance on a tight end late, like as a backup, I'd rather have a guy like him, you know, who has that upside at least than, and it pains me to say this, but even a guy like, you know, Jimmy Graham, who seems to be on the decline, you know what I mean? And he doesn't have a lot left in the tank, and he didn't have many big games, and you're going to draft Jimmy Graham a lot earlier when you could take Dawson Knox, you know, later on. Or even a guy like, I don't know, I don't want to say like Jordan Reed, because we know he's going to get hurt and his upside's pretty limited. So I don't know. To me, I'd rather take the upside play.
Well, I mean, he is free, so
there you go.
There's no risk, right? That's the nice thing about all the players we just talked about is when you draft them, there's no risk. You know, you're drafting them basically with your last pick. In deeper formats, I mean, obviously these aren't guys you're going to draft in a 12-team league, right? These are guys you're drafting in 16-team leagues or leagues with really deep rosters, maybe like, you know, like when we're talking about Knox and Weller, two tight end type leagues, stuff like that. So, yeah, you're basically getting them for free and you're just hoping for the best.
Wait, people don't actually play two tight end leagues, do they?
Please, unfortunately, they do. You should play in a zero tight end league. Instead, people are playing two tight end leagues because they think somehow that makes the tight end position more valuable. When all it does is make you want to shoot yourself because you have to figure out who your second tight end is going to be between Darren Weller and Dawson Knox.
It's like baseball. You have two catcher leagues. It's like, why? It's like, are you just trying? You just must be like a sadist. You're just trying to torture yourself. I mean, there's no actual benefit to it. It just makes you hate catchers. It makes you hate tight ends more. It makes you wish you didn't have an enemy. So. It's like, why don't we have two kicker leagues? Like, hey, every kicker has to have some points, right? Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to start that movement. It's not ban the tight end, right? It's go toward the flex. Yeah. You want it like the wide receiver / tight end.
Yeah. In a perfect world, you get rid of tight end and add a super flex. But if that's too much for your league, get rid of tight end and just add another flex spot. And if somebody drafts Travis Kelce or George Kittle or Zach Ertz or OJ Howard, they can put that player in the flex.
But I like that. I mean, let's say you have to start three receivers and then you have to start one tight end and then you have a fourth wide receiver / tight end. So if you want to go with a fourth guy, no?
I'm saying you don't even have to start a tight end.
At all. No, well, then, so wouldn't you rather always go with a fourth receiver than a tight end, or only if you have one of those top tight ends?
No, because you, I don't think you would play like John Brown over Travis Kelce.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so how many tight ends, like how deep would it go at tight end before you're starting a fourth receiver as opposed to a starting tight end? Is there like eight?
Eight. Yeah. But that's the thing. That's what people, that's why this makes sense, because once you get past that eighth tight end, and it might not even be eight, I don't even know if it was eight last year, all the rest of the tight ends are basically the same guy. It's the same. They're basically the same guy. Like, it's like you look at it, you have like 10 tight ends that score between, you know, 4 to 7 points, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're one of the, if you, let's say you draft George Kittle because you think, you know, I'm going to get one of these great tight ends, and then George Kittle gets hurt week one, and now you're forced to grab one of these crappy tight ends for the rest of the season, you're at a huge disadvantage because you have to keep starting these crappy guys. Whereas if you, if that position wasn't required, and instead you had a flex, maybe you had a running back or a wide receiver on your bench who's pretty, you know, who's decent, like a wide receiver three or a low end RB2 type that you could play instead and keep your team afloat, rather than having to sit here and throw some guy out there getting 4 points every week, you know, and just hating life.
Yeah, if Kelce or Ertz goes down this year, like with an ACL or something, again, don't at me. I'm not jinxing anything, all right? It's not true. There's no such thing. But yeah, if that happens, there's going to be a suicide watch for a lot of fantasy owners because they're putting first-round picks into these guys. So, yeah.
I mean, that's why Jalen Samuels won so many Yahoo leagues last year. True. Because he had tight end eligibility. So you got to put a starting running back in a tight end. And you just decimated the rest of your league because you had such an advantage at tight end over everybody else. I mean, maybe Kelce was close, maybe Ertz some weeks or Kittle some weeks, but I mean, you're talking about a starting running back in your tight end spot, in your tight end spot. So just don't make it a required. I'm not saying get rid of tight ends. Just instead of having a requirement for tight end, whatever your current league format is, take the requirement for tight end and just change it to another flex spot. Running back, wide receiver, tight end. If somebody has an awesome tight end, like Kelce, boom, he's in their flex. But if somebody, you know, loses a tight end, or if Kelce goes down, at least the person who owns them can go grab a running back or wide receiver off their bench and keep their team afloat.
You know, I'd like to see, maybe we can be the ones to start this, like it's all flex, like a league roster where you have one super flex spot, maybe two, and then the rest just flex. Like, you don't have to have one or two running backs. You don't have to have three receivers. Just flex running back slash receiver, you know, three of those, a couple of receivers slash tight ends, one or two super flex. Just all flex, right? No required spots. That would be a whole different element to strategy, wouldn't it?
Oh, for sure, because now you're just trying to get – now you're just – I mean, I don't actually like that as much because I feel like it does eliminate strategy a little bit. It just comes down to picking the – guys you think are going to score the most points regardless of position, right? So just every round when it's your turn, you just pick the guy you think is going to score the most points rather than looking at your team and going like, I've already drafted four running backs and I can only play two of these guys, but even though I think this running back is going to score more than the wide receiver, I have to take the wide receiver, right? So it kind of changes the strategy a little bit that way. It's just more about like, just pick the guys you think are going to score the most points. I'm not really a fan of that so much. I wouldn't mind if it was something like, you only had to start one running back and two wide receivers. I think two wide receivers because there's more. It's a deeper position, right? There's more startable wide receivers. And then the rest flex, I'd be okay with that. And definitely super flex.
Okay. Yeah. Super flex is the way to go, I think.
But I think you need some starting requirements so people, you know, have to actually think like, oh, my wide receivers kind of suck. I better start grabbing some wide receivers. Or my running backs kind of suck. I better start getting some running backs.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just drafting best player available every time it's your turn. I thought it's just like mindless. Okay, who's going to be the best out of these guys? Him. Who's going to be the best out of these guys? Him.
True.
For me, that's not as enjoyable, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people use that argument against best ball. I say, well, you know, you don't have to make your lineup decisions. You don't have to worry too much about depth and all that. And to some extent, yeah, that's true. It takes out that element of strategy each week, but you do have to build. We've talked, you know, on here about roster construction. We talked about that last year. So there's a different type of strategy. I mean, no, during the season, there's none, but it just makes the draft that much more important. So.
Yeah, people who go into best ball and just think, oh, just draft the best player available, they don't win because they don't – because roster construction is so important because, again, there's no waivers. So if you just keep drafting running backs because that's the best player available and you don't have enough wide receivers and your wide receivers get hurt, your team's done, right? Or vice versa, if you are just keep drafting wide receivers – and you only draft three running backs because, you know, you thought the wide receiver that was available would score more and your running backs don't do anything, you lose. So there's definitely, like, you can't know. Best ball is not just about drafting the best player available.
Absolutely. Which, by the way, reminds me, we're going to look for our other episode to talk about our best ball draft we did on FFPC. And that's going to be on this very channel, which, by the way, have you subscribed? You really should. Like this video, subscribe to us, and you'll get our content each and every week. Not just us, guys, but this coming season, we have a whole host of new talent coming, and we're going to have a lot of weekly segments, some familiar from last year. Of course, we're going to have start, sit, and waivers, but hopefully some new content too. So big things happening here at the Rotoballer channel. Check us out. We are the Fantasy Bomb Crew, and we'll be back again with more videos for you. Dominate your draft. All right, thanks for watching.